Getting Started in Beekeeping. Introduction. Beekeeping is a rich and rewarding experience and a worthwhile endeavor if you are looking to start as a hobbyist or even have aspirations of becoming a commercial beekeeper. This guide is designed to provide practical and insightful advice on the steps for getting started and having a successful first year, which we hope will lead you to a lifetime pursuit in keeping bees. Keeping bees in your municipality. Adherence to any applicable laws and regulations. Beekeeping has been practiced for centuries, and it is probable that wherever you live, there are bees being hosted in an apiary somewhere in your vicinity. As a rule, the keeping of bees is not highly regulated or restricted at the municipal level, but given that bees are stinging insects, there are some municipalities that do impart restrictions or outright bans on keeping bees. Before hosting bees, be sure to know and follow applicable local and state laws. Also, be sure to obtain any necessary permits if they are required. If you are unfamiliar with your state or municipal laws, we suggest that you contact the local or state beekeeping association for guidance before you seek guidance with your municipality. They are often well-versed in the restrictions for the districts they serve and can provide assistance and information about keeping bees where you live. Speaking with fellow beekeepers first may prevent causing unwanted attention at the municipal level when officials are suddenly faced with answering an inquiry about making a decision to allow the hosting of stinging insects. While beekeeping is safe when practiced correctly, misconceptions and conservative opinions could lead to negative consequences at the municipal level for allowing the keeping of bees and also possibly result in unwanted impacts to beekeeping operations already established. We encourage you to do the right amount of diligence when it comes to ensuring that you are going to comply with applicable laws, regulations, and local ordinances. In addition to compliance to applicable regulations, beekeepers should be aware that state agencies often require registration of hives with the proper authorities, and beekeepers should expect that agents of the state can and will inspect hives on private property. Inspectors will also likely require beehives with designs that allow the frames that the bees live on to be movable so they can be taken out for inspection. This is opposed to the notion that bees could be kept in hives such as a tree trunk that cannot be taken apart and inspected for diseases and problems. Again, we recommend that you contact your local beekeepers association for hive registration information. New Jersey guidance. The state of New Jersey has three statutes concerning the keeping of bees at the time of this writing. In addition to the statutes, there is a mandatory requirement to register your bees with the New Jersey Department of Agriculture, and we strongly advise you to adhere to the published guide provided by the state entitled Guidelines for Keeping Bees in Populated Areas. Resources for this information and more are available at the State of New Jersey Department of Agricultural website, Bee Inspection Program, at the following web address: www.state.nj.us/agricultural/divisions/pi/prog/beeinspection.html. The best time to get started in beekeeping. Late winter is the ideal time to get started. New beekeepers will need bees to get started, and the January-February months are the appropriate time to place an order for spring delivery. The availability of bees for springtime, and more specifically, properly mated quality queens, is dictated by the arrival of suitable weather for companies that supply the bees. The highest proliferation of major bee suppliers are in the warmer climate states of Georgia, California, and Hawaii, as they get an earlier start than many parts of the country. High demands on bee suppliers occur during the approach of spring because of the demand for bees in areas where winter is subsiding and beekeeping is starting up again. Even though warmer weather arrives earlier for the predominant areas where bees are sourced, the suppliers scramble each year to meet the demand. This is especially true given the recent popularity in beekeeping, which has resulted in more people keeping bees. Another reason to get your start in late winter is that it allows time for ordering and constructing equipment, preparing a site for bees to be hosted, and any other preparatory steps needed to get set up. Completing the preparation steps out of the way prior to the beekeeping season and subsequently getting bees set up at the onset of spring ensures that they have access to the best food and resources available to them through nature. A springtime start also gives a colony sufficient time to grow and mature, which in turn will get them to a state where they can build enough bees and create enough stores to successfully overwinter. Time investment and expected expenses. Initial time investment and ongoing expectations. How much time will it take? The time investment for a new beekeeper will include a moderate amount of time in the beginning setting up your bee yard, obtaining and preparing your equipment, and getting things up and running. Once things settle in, it will mean a period of once or twice a week oversight, with more time investments required for harvesting honey, treatments, or any other activities that require more than the typical health and well-being inspections. To judge the moderate activity mentioned, beehives shipped in the mail come unassembled, and two hives can take a beginner about 2 weekends worth of time for assembly. The boxes and equipment can be assembled in a matter of hours if you are handy, but you will want to take your time to become familiar with the parts and pieces and allow for the painting tasks that are part of the effort. Preparing a site will differ for each situation. Later in this guide, there will be information about where to set up a bee yard for optimal exposure, and that will dictate if you need to clear an area or just set the bees out on a spot that is ready to go. Some equate beekeeping to housing simple livestock like chickens or taking care of a garden. This is a reasonable comparison, as bees do require periodic checks and at certain times appropriate maintenance, like any other live animal, and therefore a moderate amount of interaction. Noted Honeybee magazine editor Kim Flottam has been quoted as saying, "The time required for keeping two hives in your backyard is to figure that it will take more time than you need to properly care for your cat, but less time than needed to take care of your dog." The reasoning here is that if a cat has access to a food bowl and a litter box, then it is likely they can get by for a few days. Dogs, on the other hand, will need to be fed each day, and you'll have to take them outside. Once in a hive, bees need looking into every few days or once a week, but you don't have to check on them every single day. The initial build-out of your hives may or may not require you to pick up your bees. It will depend upon the approach that you employ. Installing package bees for two hives will usually take about an hour, and one can expect to provide oversight on the first few weeks to ensure the colony is growing and to step in and provide more space and time when the hive boxes start to fill out and more space is required. The bees will require water, and you'll have to feed them when they are starting out, or at least until there is a nectar flow. After the nectar flow, you'll also need to feed a new colony to ensure that they have what they need to grow to full strength. Once the hives are established, beekeepers can live by the general guide that the beekeeping season starts in early spring and continues until just after the first frost. Most times, the winter period requires very minimal interaction with the hives while the bees overwinter. If you are in a zone where bees do not have an overwinter, then the season will run all year long, with some dormant times when the conditions are 40 to 45 degrees or lower. One-time costs and yearly costs. One-time costs. The bulk one-time costs will typically center upon the purchase of equipment and personal gear. Common figures cited are around $250 US for a hive, plus the shipping costs to wherever you reside. Many beekeeping suppliers offer free shipping for this equipment. Do note that this cost often does not include the extra boxes that are needed for bees to store honey, so the actual cost of a hive setup with honey boxes is really around $350 US. Gear for personal protection is also an additional cost and will vary depending upon what you opt to purchase. Some will only purchase a veil and go the long-sleeve clothing route, while others will want to have a full suit. Veils range anywhere from $10 to $30, while a full suit can run anywhere from $80 to $150 or more in the mainstream market. There are children's sizes and petite sizes too, and they tend to run a little lower than the full adult sizes. A smoker, hive tool, and other necessities are a must-have, and these will likely set you back another $50. All told, the odds and ends will add up somewhere to around $450 to $550 equipment-wise to get your first year up and running with one hive. We recommend that you start with two hives, and if you follow that recommendation, then you could plan to a budget another $250. The purchase of bees is separate from the startup cost and is the next biggest expenditure. Bees are often purchased in either a package or by buying a nucleus hive configuration, which in essence is a full hive in miniature. Packages are less expensive than the cost of a nucleus colony, and depending upon the size of the package purchased and whether you pick them up or get them through the mail, they are often quoted around $75 to $85, but prices vary widely depending upon supplier. Nucleus hives, or nukes as they are known, are more expensive but provide a more established colony to start with. Other costs that have to be considered for keeping bees is the cost of harvesting honey. There are several methods that can allow a beekeeper to extract honey inexpensively, but some nominal cost should be expected. If the beekeeper wishes, they can invest in an extractor which spins the honey out of the honeycomb. The prices for extractors vary widely, and a basic model can go for over $400. A typical approach in beekeeping circles is for an association to purchase an extractor and loan it to beekeepers who need to share the costs. Sometimes a group of individuals will go in and purchase one machine and share it amongst the owners. Compared to startup costs for other pastimes, beekeeping is a relatively inexpensive hobby once the initial investment is out of the way. Yearly costs. The yearly costs for beehives center on three areas: feeding the bees, medicating the bees if needed, and equipment maintenance. In a perfect world, bees would get by with what nature provides and there would be no need to supplement their diets. There are, however, times where natural forage is not available and supplemental feed is necessary. This typically means buying bags of regular cane sugar from a supermarket or discount chain, such as Costco or Sam's Club. Sugar is mixed with water and provided to the bees as a syrup or in a candy configuration. When times require it, you can often get by with expenditures of less than $50 a hive. Bees may require medication or treatments to ensure the hive remains healthy. The Varroa mite is a common pest that often has to be dealt with to keep the bees in good order. Expect to budget anywhere from $35 to $50 a year for treatments. The third cost is about keeping your equipment in good working order. Hive equipment is fairly durable and often has a long shelf life if well painted. The boxes will last several years before requiring replacement if well maintained. Sometimes, through normal use, equipment becomes damaged or lost and requires replacement. A nominal amount should be planned for each year. How to get started? Attend a class. Attending a beginning beekeeping class is sound advice. Long-standing bee classes are conducted with curriculum that is sound and delivered by senior beekeepers who have practical knowledge. Beginner classes can be hosted by state organizations, schools, local bee clubs, and even colleges. Different beginner classes can range from a few hours to one day to a couple of days and even longer. There is a type of class in beekeeping referred to as a short course. These short courses typify a class that was designed to be a comprehensive introduction for new beekeepers and often are a full introduction to all that you will need to manage your bees until you get established and can manage on your own. Most beekeeping courses are offered in the early spring just prior to the beekeeping season. They are popular and fill up fast, so the recommendation is, if there is a course that meets your needs, do not delay in securing a registration. How to get started? Join an association. Joining a local or regional bee club is a prudent step to getting started in the pursuit of keeping bees. Associations are a valuable source of information and provide a place where one can ask questions and learn from the experience of others. Most associations have seasoned beekeepers that share information with the club and cater to the success of new beekeepers. In addition to the members of the associations, it is common practice for the clubs to bring in speakers from academia, other bee clubs, state agencies, and other sources to help support and educate the members. Another strong reason to join an association is the interaction with other beekeepers who are new and learning at the same time you are. The networking and exchange camaraderie with new beekeepers is strong. How to get started, Part 3. Find a mentor. As a new beekeeper, it is normal to feel insecure and even experience anxiety when working with your bees for the first few times, and having a mentor can be an invaluable aid when getting started. If, as a new beekeeper, you can secure a mentor, then you'll have access to someone to call when times require a consultation. It should be noted, however, that sometimes mentors are hard to come by. There is often competition for seasoned beekeepers' time, and one can't forget that they likely have their own operation to take care of. If you can find a mentor, then all the better. If you cannot, however, joining an association is the next best thing. It is easier for a seasoned beekeeper to speak to a group at a planned meeting than to commit to one-on-one sessions with individual beekeepers. It should be noted that some associations have specifically taken actions to put a mentoring program in place to aid new beekeepers, and if you belong to one and they don't have one, consider suggesting this. Location of the bee yard. Introduction. The location of where you will host your bees is an important aspect of beginning beekeeping. Two requirements stand out among many, and they center upon placing your bees where they will not be a harm to others, and placing your bees where they will not be compromised by the environment around them. Be a good neighbor. Whenever considering a bee yard, one must ensure that the bees will not be a nuisance to others or a danger to the public. Special consideration should be given at all times, and especially when keeping bees in populated areas. Setbacks from property borders, concern for neighbors who are adverse to bees, and knowledge of anyone who is subject to life-threatening allergies when stung are important matters that cannot be ignored when choosing a bee yard. More specifically, putting anyone in harm's way is just not an acceptable risk, and the selection of a different location must be done. One should equally consider any potential harm to other living animals. Keep bee yards away from penned or chained livestock or pets if there is a potential risk of injury. For the good of beekeeping, and for your own personal good, it is recommended that you manage your neighbor's expectations. If you have a good relationship with your neighbors and the situation is right, make the appropriate communication as needed. If, however, you do not have a good relationship or have any doubts about how your bees will be received, then you should take whatever measures necessary to get clearance before investing the time and energy to place your bees. Bad neighbor relationships rarely result in a good outcome, and the bees will more than likely become an immediate source of contention. There are alternatives that can solve some problems and may still allow you to keep bees on your property if conditions are not ideal. Constructing barriers so the bees fly up and over something is one example. Putting bees on a roof is another. On a roof, the bees could be out of sight and out of mind as they fly higher than one would expect, so no one is alarmed by the bees coming and going. If you do have a situation where some problem needs to be solved as a result of bee placement, seek advice from experienced beekeepers as they may be able to give you options that can resolve the issue at hand. If you have a property that is an outright no-go for keeping bees, or something comes up that prevents you from hosting, consider seeking a land use permission arrangement with another property owner. There are often farm properties, orchards, garden clubs, or other opportunities that would allow you to host bees for a nominal cost or even for free. Picking a location for success. The location in which you place your equipment is important for the survival of the bees. The right location will have protection from the elements, be near a water and food source, and in a location that provides proper protection from bears, skunks, and other potential predators. A variety of plants in the vicinity of the bee yard is desirable as it provides the best chance for nectar stores and pollen throughout the active seasons. A site to keep bees should be level and in an area that is dry. Wet areas could cause moisture problems for the bees, and drier is better. On the topic of moisture, do consider flood zones and keep your bees away from any area that has the potential to flood. Avoid low spots in the yard where cold, damp air accumulates in the winter. Consider on your property where the last place is for the snow to melt or the ground to firm up after a heavy rain and realize that that is not where you want to place your bees. Protection from wind, especially in winter, is advisable. Windbreaks can be erected from hay bales or even planting some shrubs or small trees. Lastly, hives should be placed for easy access and provide the beekeeper with the means to perform whatever maintenance is required during any season. It is recommended that the hives be placed in full sun if possible or light shade. Shade can sometimes foster pests such as the small hive beetles, ants, and wax moths. Typically, hives do best facing in a southeasterly direction or toward the morning sun, as this warms up the hive and gets the bees active. It also dries out the hive from the morning dew and moisture. Bees will fly from the hive on cleansing flights, and surfaces under the flight path can be stained or damaged with spots as a result of the bees defecating. Hives should be placed where bees are not flying over cars or other items that could be damaged. You also do not want the bees to be flying over sidewalks, walking paths, or any places where pedestrians are possible. Revisiting the topic of water, bees will find a water source and it is hard to break the habit if it happens to be your neighbor's pool, bird bath, or kiddie pool. One should provide a water source prior to the placement of the bees. Bees will go to whatever water suits them and not necessarily to the water you put out. Every precaution should be made, however, to provide a water source palatable to the bees on your property and in close proximity to the hive, so they expend less energy to bring water back to the colony. Bees do not like to get their feet wet, so your water feature should have a place where they can stand and sip from a perch. Information is available on the internet for different ways to go about this. Another contemplation for choosing a beekeeping location centers upon predators, as we've mentioned. If you live in an area where protection from bears or other predators is a consideration, then a location near an electrical source would be ideal for a powered fence. It is not a hard requirement, as solar options are available, but a house power source is often recommended as a better way to keep fences operational. Bears tend to live in areas where streams are and food is available to them. If you have that type of terrain where you're planning to put your bees, a bee fence is recommended. The last item for coverage in this guide is foraging and the availability of nectar and pollen sources. Even in urban and suburban areas, there are sources of forage for bees within their flight zones. It is generally said that bees can fly 4 to 5 miles out, and in a radius from the hive, this provides a reasonable area for forage to be found. However, there will be times where hive yards will be located at a place where single crops dominate the land and forage could be a concern. Heavily farmed areas could also come with a pesticide concern, and it is suggested that you review your area and consider an alternate placement if this is a product of your environment. Setting up the hives in the bee yard. The advice in this section is a personal preference but worth consideration. When choosing a spot for beehives, one should make every attempt to ensure that the bees can remain in that position for the foreseeable future. While there are ways to move a hive to another spot, it is not as simple as picking it up and moving it away. Bees emerging from a hive through biology orient themselves to that exact location, and unless special measures are taken, will often return to that location even if you've moved the hive only a few feet. Another recommendation, but this can be personal preference, is to leave space between each hive so that one can walk around the hive and access it from all sides. Contrary to that, some beekeepers put their hives literally right next to each other. In addition, one might want to consider leaving enough space to get equipment in and around the hive boxes. Hive components can get heavy when loaded with honey and when they are fully built out and contain bees. Some beekeepers prefer to build a platform to raise the bottom board off the ground. This situates the top box of a conventional setup a little bit higher. The theory behind setting hives on a hive stand or platform is that they should be easier to lift and cause less stress on the back muscles and body. This is in contrast to picking them up from a bent over position when they're directly on the ground. At minimum, a hive stand or platform is recommended to get the hive up off the solid ground and to prevent from putting the bottom board on dirt. Equipment insights. The Langstroth hive. The predominant hive in use today in the United States is the Langstroth hive. Named after Reverend Lorenzo Langstroth, this hive had its genesis in the 1800s and still is in widespread use today. There are other form factors for hives such as top bar hives and national hives. For the purpose of this guide, we will recommend beekeepers start with the Langstroth hives, and once established, try the other hives if that is desired. There is nothing indicating that one cannot start with an alternate type of hive, but that will not be covered here. Starter kit description. The basic hive and honey supers. A basic hive has a bottom, boxes that hold frames in the middle, and covers that go on top. The boxes that house the bees and contain the honey come in different heights, but there are standardized dimensions for their exteriors. The internals vary from manufacturer to manufacturer, and this is an important consideration and will be covered in the equipment selection insight area of this guide a little bit later. Working from the bottom up, these are the common components of a Langstroth hive. Hive stand. A hive stand is an optional piece of equipment and sits under a bottom board. The purpose of this device is to get the hive up off the ground. These come in different designs, heights, and configurations. The reason they are optional is that some beekeepers will place a hive bottom board on cement blocks, hive platforms, or other arrangements, and it makes this piece of equipment redundant. The bottom board. A bottom board serves as the floor of the hive. It is longer in dimension than the hive box that sits upon it and provides a place for the flying bees to land and walk into the hive. Bottom boards come in two common formats, solid and screened. Screened bottom boards. Screened bottom boards are often recommended over traditional wooden bottom boards as they are considered a form of integrated pest management. Integrated pest management, or IPM, it is loosely defined as a means of managing bees without chemicals. Screen bottom boards allow for mites and other predators in the hive to fall through to the ground and are in widespread use and becoming or already are the predominant base for a hive. Common designs of screen bottom boards come with an included insert that allows a beekeeper to close off the screen for colder weather. The inserts slide into pre-configured slots on the bottom side of the screen bottom board device and below the screen proper. Often these inserts are made of thin corrugated plastic material and come with an imprint that allows the beekeepers to count falling mites for infestation assessments. Solid bottom boards. Solid boards are just what they sound like. There is a rim with a solid base underneath, and they fit underneath the traditional hive body and provide a hard floor to the hive. Hive bodies. These wooden, plastic, or even styrofoam boxes hold the frames that the bees live on and where the bees store food in the colony. A common configuration for the standard hive is to have two deep boxes with medium or shallow boxes on top to store honey. The term hive bodies and hive boxes can be used interchangeably. Boxes come in different sizes, and they are often referred to by names such as deeps, mediums, and shallows. The difference of the boxes lies with their dimensions. The length and width of the boxes remains the same so they can be stacked on top of each other and match up, but the heights differ for reasons of utility. Deep boxes are the tallest and are used for the bees to live in. This area is often referred to as the brood chamber. Deep boxes can also be used on the top of the brood chamber for honey storage. Medium and shallow boxes are shorter in height and most often are placed on top of the brood chamber for honey storage. Boxes placed on top of the brood chamber are referred to as supers. Super, like Superman, and not supper, like sitting down to a meal. When honey is stored in a bee box, it can become quite heavy, and a full deep can weigh upwards to 90 pounds. Because they are shorter in height, medium and shallow boxes weigh less when fully loaded. Medium boxes loaded with honey are said to be around 60 pounds, while shallow will come in at 30 to 40 pounds. It should be noted that for weight reasons, some beekeepers choose to use three medium-sized boxes to make up the brood chamber instead of two deep boxes. The downside of this is it requires 30 frames inside and more equipment. For some beekeepers, the trade-off of weight against the cost is worthwhile. 8. Frame equipment. There is an option to purchase standard Langstroth equipment in boxes that have narrower dimensions. These boxes hold 8 conventional frames instead of 10. These entered into the picture for the same reason that shorter height boxes came about. They are smaller and lighter in weight. Some beekeepers also believe that using 8 frames makes more sense, as sometimes bees do not fully build out a 10-frame box from side to side. The conventional route is to go with a 10-frame configuration, but for the sake of completeness, we wanted to let you know of the 8-frame option. Frames and foundation. The frames inside of a Langstroth hive are made of 4 pieces, with the top bar being the most structurally sound so that it can hold the weight and also hold up to beekeepers prying it out of the box if it is propolized down. Typical frames rest upon rabbeted ledges that are built into the boxes and have a slot for you to slide in wax foundation. Foundation is pre-printed wax that comes with a cell configuration on it, and the bees accept the wax and build out the honeycomb on the foundation. Foundation comes in different forms and substrates, the most common being a wax foundation with wires that run throughout to give it structure and integrity. Inner cover. Above the brood boxes, or honey supers if they are in use, is the inner cover. This flat cover sits on the hive boxes and is sealed by the bees with propolis, and that results in an insulated cover. The inner cover has an oblong hole in the top that allows the bees to pass through and also allows air and moisture to circulate out of the top of the hive. One purpose of this device is to provide a barrier to keep the bees from sealing the outer cover on the hive, which telescopes down over the edges. If no inner cover was used, the top cover would be sealed to the box and the beekeeper would have a difficult time using a hive tool to remove it. Telescoping cover. This is the top cover of the hive. It is referred to as a telescoping cover because its sides hang down over the box it covers. The typical cover is covered by a metal sheathing that helps to protect it from the elements and also any weights that are placed on top of the hive to keep the cover from blowing off in high winds. Feeding devices, hive top feeders, inner feeders, and Boardman feeders. Feeding bees is a necessity at times when nature does not provide the forage in the form of nectar and pollen. Beekeepers feed a sugar and water solution to bees when required, and there are many ways to deliver. These are the 3 most common used equipment devices to deliver sugar syrup solution. Hive top feeders. Hive top feeders come in many configurations. The advantages of these devices is the ability to deliver large quantities of syrup without having to open the hive. They have limitations in cold weather, as bees will not come up to the top of the hive for syrup, but oftentimes these are a good choice. Inner hive feeders. Inner hive feeders again come in many formats. These feeders resemble a frame in size and dimension and are employed inside the hive boxes and alongside the bees. To fill them, you remove the cover of the hive and pour your liquids inside. The feeders have a port in the top that allows filling, and it also allows access for the bees to get into the syrup. These feeders are inside the hive and convenient for the bees, even if the weather is cool. The downside is they do not hold much syrup as a top feeder. It should be noted that these feeders are often referred to as division board feeders and can be found in catalogs with that title. Boardman type feeders. Commonly sold with beginning kits, Boardman feeders resemble an upside down mason jar or mayonnaise jar. They are placed at the entrance of a hive and bees can come to the entrance for syrup. For feeding, these have fallen out of favor as they have been deemed to cause bees from other hives to come to the entrance and subsequently enter the foreign hive and rob it of its honey. Another downside is the small capacity, which requires refilling almost every day on an active hive. Instead of being used to feed sugar syrup, there are recommendations to use these for water instead. They still have the capacity problem, but they do conveniently place water at the source for the colony. Inverted pails or jars. An alternate method of hive top feeder is a common feeding method of taking a pail or a jar and poking holes in its top cover. The holes are small enough to allow the syrup to drip through when the device is inverted over the bees. Commonly, the pail or jar is inverted over the inner cover and the circular hole that we talked about a moment ago, and an empty box is placed around it to keep the bees outside from getting in and robbing the hive. Additional equipment. There are additional pieces of equipment that are part of a hive kit that you can consider to purchase. We'll cover two of them here. Queen excluders. Queen excluders are used between the brood chamber and the honey supers to prevent the queen from moving up to the top of the hive and producing bees in and amongst the honey storage area. Beekeepers also use these for some advanced beekeeping activities where they need to contain the queen or perform maintenance activities. Section comb supers. Some beekeepers like to produce honey products that include honeycomb in the packaged goods. Special boxes are available for creating comb honey, but these are usually considered specialized pieces of equipment and not something that a beginner beekeeper needs. Equipment purchase advice. Purchasing a pre-formatted kit. Most of the major vendors sell beginner kits, which will get you everything you need plus some things you will likely not need. Some beekeepers like to go this route as it is a one-click purchase on a website and the vendors often save you the trouble of figuring out what to buy. Sometimes these kits come with items that you will not use, but they are bundled and you may have no choice. Sometimes they'll even come with equipment that is not recommended. For example, we don't recommend solid plastic hive tops, but on occasion you'll see that in the bundle. One last point, some vendors will allow you to upgrade and swap, while others will expressly forbid it. Pre-formatted kits are convenient, and it is one way to go if you are not confident in what you are going to buy in your beginner kit. Therefore, it will be left to personal preference as to if you should go this way or not. Recommendation to stay with one manufacturer for hive equipment. While it is true that the outer dimensions of beehives have been standardized, the internal construction between manufacturers vary. There is a concept in beekeeping called the bee space. Bees will always leave a channel inside the hive in the dimension of 5/16 of an inch. If a space between one surface and another is larger than that, then they may fill that space to their liking with honeycomb or propolis. Equipment manufacturers produce frames differently from make to make. If you use a frame built from manufacturer A in a hive designed by manufacturer B, it may not fit properly. A more practical example is the height difference for a frame. A frame in the top hive box will hang down over a frame that is directly below it in the bottom box. If you use one manufacturer, the space from the bottom of that frame to the top of the one below it will be 5/16 of an inch. If you used a different manufacturer frame, that distance could be 1 inch. For demonstration purposes, we'll use that number. The bees could react to this by building wax from the bottom of the frame to the top of the one below it. As a beekeeper, you will go to inspect that frame and will have a difficult time in removing it because it's connected to the one below it. The simple advice here is to choose a manufacturer and stick with their equipment exclusively, as it is almost a foregone conclusion that you will swap equipment between your hives over time. Plastic equipment. Manufacturers often have lines of beekeeping equipment made from plastic. These are appealing, especially when considering frames inside the hive, as they are extruded in one piece and require no construction. Going with plastic equipment is personal preference. Beekeepers commonly share that bees do not build out honeycomb on plastic frames as soon or as completely as they would on a typical wax foundation. In addition to bee acceptance, other considerations include plaster exposure in the sun for the outer boxes and moisture control. Warping has been reported for some brands, and plastic does not allow for moisture evaporation in the same way that wood substrates do. Pluses and minuses could be argued about the properties of plastic for use in hive construction, and it is noted that great improvements have been found since the inception of plastic for hive equipment. It is a beekeeping preference, but common wisdom is that beginner beekeepers stay away from plastic and go with woodenware until they have some experience and can make their own appropriate assessment. Ancillary equipment. There are a handful of necessary and recommended pieces of equipment that a new beekeeper could consider. Smoker. A smoker is an essential tool for working bees. Smokers are often similar in construction and features from one manufacturer to the next. The 4-inch by 7-inch size is the most common form factor, and it is recommended to purchase one with a heat shield around it. The heat shield comes into play when you set it on the ground, in your cart, or when it comes in contact with your clothes or other items. The beekeeper will use a smoker to introduce smoke into the hive for two purposes. Smoked bees exhibit a behavior in which they will engorge on honey in the hive in anticipation of having to leave. Some say this is a response analogous to a bee thinking that a forest fire could burn down their home and they may have to vacate the hive, and they don't want to leave hungry when they are going to be in search of a new home for a few days. A more practical reason to smoke a hive is because it masks a scent that the bees give off when they are alarmed at your presence. Guard bees will release a pheromone chemical to rally bees to defend the hive when an intruder is present, and the smoke masks the scent and the bees do not answer the call. A hive tool. Similar to a pry bar, the common hive tool has a flat end and a curved end. Its design allows the beekeeper to separate boxes glued together by the bees and to pry out frames with the leverage generated at the curved end. The shape and configuration of these tools do vary, as some other form factors have been introduced into the market with hooks and other features. Most can get away with the conventional hive tool, but again, this is personal preference. Do consider one that is brightly colored, as these are easily misplaced when set down or lost when dropped on the ground. Other equipment options. There are other pieces of equipment that a beekeeper could purchase for hive management. While a smoker and a hive tool are required, most of these are optional. A bee brush. A bee brush is probably the most common optional tool in a beekeeper's kit. It is a long bristle brush designed to flick the bees off the face of a comb. It is often used during the reconfiguration of hives when they are working with frame replacements or movements, and also comes in handy for removing bees off of honey frames during harvest collections. Frame grips. A frame grip is a device that slips between two frames and allows one to grasp the top bar of a frame for extraction. It allows a beekeeper to pull the frame up with a grip instead of prying it out with a hive tool. Some beekeepers like this method, and others feel it is not a good way to go because it could cause a new beekeeper to crush bees when pulling frames. Crushed bees emit an alarm pheromone and cause the bees to come to defense of the colony. The frame grips can be awkward at times to work with, but once you get used to using one, it might become a preference to have one of these in your kit. It is not something that one has to have to start out with. Frame holders. These devices are designed to hang from the sides of a hive box during inspection, and it provides two prongs to hang combs that have been removed from the hive. The prongs prevent you from having to set the frames on the ground. These actually are handy to have and easy to use. New beekeepers often struggle with what to do with frames being pulled from a hive for inspection. It is not necessary for a new kit, but for convenience sake, it is something that is worth looking at. Yard cart, bucket, or some type of container. The last piece of equipment really isn't a beekeeping piece of equipment, but is just as necessary as anything else. It is recommended that you secure something to help with equipment being brought back and forth to the hives. A bucket or tool bag will work for general inspections. A yard cart or wheelbarrow type conveyance is probably needed when moving honey boxes and hive equipment in and out of your bee yard. Personal equipment. Equipment selection insight. Personal equipment is all about providing safety and comfort to the beekeeper. The recommendation for beekeepers is to wear a veil or head protection at all times when working bees. Getting stung anywhere on the head, and especially on the face and neck, could result in an allergic reaction, and for a select few, an acute allergic reaction. Any reactions in the vicinity of your airway are serious, so again, a veil or head protection is recommended at all times. Choosing the amount of protection. Seasoned beekeepers who have a sensibility with managing bees can and do work bees with no protective gear at all. They are putting themselves at risk and do not set a good example in general, but this is a personal choice. The recommendation for a new beekeeper is a veil at minimum. The choice of how much protection to wear is often a factor of how much protection you want as a beekeeper and for comfort reasons. Beekeeping suits are not stingless, but obviously are better than working the bees in a common t-shirt. Cost is another factor, as bee suits cost money, and it is absolutely acceptable to wear regular street clothes comprised of long sleeve shirts and long pants with a veil. Beekeeping suits and jackets. Protective gear that you wear can come in the form of veils with extenders, jackets, and even full jumpsuits. For cost reasons, many beekeepers start out with a simple veil, and once invested in beekeeping, move up to a jacket or suit. The equipment comes in all sizes and can be fitted for young children to large adults of varying shapes and sizes. Veils with extenders. Veils with extenders can be described as a garment that has a partial bee suit that covers your upper chest and shoulders. They are intended to go under a garment and provide protection for your head and neck area. Jackets. Jackets are usually half suits with some length to them and a gathering at the bottom that prevent the bees from sneaking underneath. Almost all jackets feature a detachable veil as part of the package. The detachable veil is a special veil that falls over across your face and has ribs to keep the mesh out and away from your eyes while you're working the bees. Common veils. Veils are available in two common configurations. Older style veils are made of a soft cloth with a netting that hangs down around the neck that allows it to be tied so bees cannot get up underneath it. The other configuration, which is more common nowadays, is a helmet-type hat that has a netting component that slides down over top of it. The helmet hat has a brim that holds the netting away from your face and gives the veil shape. The final piece of protective equipment is gloves. Gloves are another common piece of equipment for new beekeepers. These too come in many styles and materials. Gloves range from simple hand gloves that cover your hands to ones that will have cuffs that will go all the way up to the elbow. New beekeepers often like to envelop themselves and do the most they can from being stung, which is understandable. However, seasoned beekeepers will recommend that the better option is not to use gloves at all. It gives the beekeeper more of a touch in the hive, and more caution will be taken when working the bees without gloves. The sensibility will prevent pinching and crushing bees on the comb, and protective gloves are clumsy. Pinched and crushed bees, again, will exude a chemical alarm that brings the bees to defense, and the loss of tactile feel is actually a disadvantage when wearing gloves. If new beekeepers are uncomfortable with the thought of being stung on the hands, then gloves are a reasonable way to go for a sense of protection. Over time, and with experience, beekeepers can move to a gloveless state. Gloves for bees come in different weights, and stiff, thick gloves are probably not very suitable. Midweight to light materials provide the best trade-off on dexterity and protection. It is often common that beekeepers use gloves intended for other uses while working hives. Latex, nitrile, and even dishwashing gloves provide protection and some level of dexterity and are good options. There is another reason to wear gloves for beekeepers, and that is that you are going to get propolis and or wax, honey, and other things on your hands, and you can stain your hands and it is difficult to get it off. If you get propolis on your hands, the best option is to use rubbing alcohol, but if you have gloves on, presumably nitrile gloves or something that you can throw away, then your hands do not get dirty. Some beekeepers will tell you that they don't want to use gloves because it is an environmental impact, and also you're taking gloves and the debris from one hive on the gloves into another hive and you could cross-contaminate. Again, the use of gloves is a personal preference, and most beekeepers in the beginning will be well suited by buying a medium to light pair of gloves to wear until they're comfortable inside the hive. Extraction equipment. All beekeepers enjoy the delight of freshly harvested honey. For a new beekeeper, a common question is, how do you take away the honey from the bees and get it into the jars? There are some equipment choices to help with honey harvest and a few methods that can be employed. Bee removal equipment. When it comes time to harvest honey, the beekeeper will need to take the honey frames from the hive and leave any bees behind. There are a handful of methods that can be employed. Blowing the bees off the comb, making them leave through a special board but not letting them back in, and even fumes to drive them away are a few of the techniques. A fume board. Fume boards are a two-piece device that consists of a box with a floor that is lined with felt and a chemical that emits fumes that the bees do not like. You squirt the felt with the chemical and put the box on the top of the hive. The bees repel down into the lower boxes because they do not like the smell, and you can take the honey. An escape board. An escape board uses bee biology to empty the honey boxes. It is placed between the brood chamber and the honey boxes, and due to its design, bees can leave but they cannot return. It takes time for a honey box to empty, but no chemicals are involved. A blower. Bees can be blown off the comb with air. This is a method employed often by commercial beekeepers, but it has become more popular with hobby beekeepers. Bee blowers work in the same principle as a leaf blower, and because of their expense, some beekeepers have modified their leaf blowers for the job. These devices are probably overkill for the hobbyist. Removal of honey from the comb. Uncapping forks. An uncapping fork, or sometimes referred to as a capping scratcher, is a specialized piece of equipment. This tined fork works by inserting it underneath the capping of a honeycomb and pulling it up to free the honey from the cell. It can also be used to scratch the comb open and allow the honey to pass out of the cell upon extraction. Knives and uncapping knives. Regular household knives can be used in the harvesting of honey. Common kitchen knives, and more explicitly a long bread knife, works best for cutting cappings off the face of honeycomb. Beekeeping supply houses sell specialized electric heat knives that are designed explicitly for the job. The knife heats up and melts the capping off as it is pressed through the comb face. Extractors. Honey extractors are devices that are around the size of a conventional garbage can and contain an inner basket that you'd load frames of honey in. The top of the basket is loaded on a pivot and has a handle that spins the loaded frames, and the centrifugal force causes the honey to be flung out of the cells and onto the sides of the container. There is also a version that comes with an electric motor that turns the basket at the flip of a switch. Extractors are one of the more expensive pieces of equipment, and because of this, beekeepers sometimes share one device amongst many. A club or association may own one and share it amongst their members. Sometimes several beekeepers will buy one and split the cost between themselves. Miscellaneous equipment, buckets, filters, etc. Part of the honey harvesting process requires the honey to be collected and filtered. One could use pots and pans from the house or buy buckets and containers sold specifically for the purpose. Cheesecloth could be employed to filter extracted honey, or one could invest in a series of filter devices that will filter the honey to different degrees. Whatever your operation, it is likely that some of these pieces will be needed to harvest and process your honey. Alternatives to using equipment to harvest honey. Harvesting honey can be completed with a minimal amount of equipment and doesn't necessarily require bee removal products, uncapping forks, and extractors. One could open a hive and shake and brush the bees off the comb. Comb filled with honey could be crushed and strained without extraction. The downside of this method is you do not return your honeycomb, which took precious time to build for the bees, to the hive, but it is an alternative and does not require significant investment in equipment other than something to strain with. This is going to wrap up the equipment insights section, and next we will talk about bees. Obtaining bees, four sources. There are four common ways for beekeepers to obtain bees: purchase a package, buy a nucleus hive, buy an established hive, and hiving a swarm. Buying or receiving established hives. One way to get started in beekeeping is to buy or accept established bees from someone who has existing colonies. Doing this comes with warning, as a new beekeeper is not experienced enough to make some necessary assessments of the colony health and temperament, among other things. Another shortcoming of this approach is skipping out on the immersion of starting new bees and understanding how to develop a colony from inception. If one is set on going this route, and there are often monetary or other compelling reasons to proceed this way, then it is recommended that early on in the process, a state agent or whatever official agency that does formal inspections in your area be contacted and asked to inspect the colonies. In the state of New Jersey, the agency that does the inspections is the New Jersey Department of Agriculture. If you have purchased or obtained colonies that do have problems, you do not want to impact any existing colonies in your area. Should a problem be found, some colonies can be medicated to health, while others will have to be destroyed and the equipment burned to prevent spread and further contamination. Hiving a swarm. This is a viable way to get started in beekeeping, but is more of a serendipity approach. Having equipment ready and coming across the swarm is not entirely realistic for a new beekeeper unless you're very patient. Swarms can be found in very difficult places to extract, and the origin of the bees and their temperament is an unknown quantity. If you find yourself getting involved in beekeeping through the experience of encountering a swarm, then carry on, but for the new beekeeper, starting with a swarm is not a practical consideration. Another aspect to keep in mind of a swarm is that you do not have any choices in the bees that you start with. Purchasing a package. The predominant bee suppliers are located in the southern states of the U.S. and in California because of their warmer climates. For the northern states, package orders are often placed in January and February to ensure delivery in the early spring or pickup by local beekeepers. Unbeknownst to many, bees can literally be ordered and delivered through the U.S. Postal Service or picked up at a local beekeeper supplier near you. Bee packages come in a box that is a combination of wood and screening and include a queen and a full complement of bees. The packages are sold by the pound, with 2- and 3-pound configurations being the most common purchase. Packages should be installed as soon as they arrive, but bees should not be installed on frames that only have foundation if it is consistently below 55 degrees when your bees are delivered. The reason this is true is that when it's cold, the bees have to gather together on and inside the cells of the comb to stay warm or they will perish from the cold. This behavior is referred to as clustering. Most packages are installed on plain foundation. If you have some cone to give them, they may still get into trouble as they'll need to be able to break cluster to get to any syrup that you'll feed them. In the cold, they cannot do that and they will starve, even if there is food nearby. The good news is most beekeeping suppliers will ship when it is warm, and this is often not an issue. Bee packages are relatively easy to install, and there are numerous resources on the internet that demonstrate the process and provide written and/or video instructions. The basic procedure is to prepare the hive, spray down the bees with a sugar water solution so they become preoccupied grooming and won't fly. You literally dump the bees in the hive and put the queen cage in there with it so that the bees can release her by consuming the candy plug that keeps her contained. Packages are a great way to start with bees, but literally means starting from scratch, and this method requires the longest time to get up and established. That being said, it is the most common way for new beekeepers to start hives and highly recommended, as you will get the most experience this way. Pre-placing orders in late winter ensures you get the bees with the characteristics you want and that the beekeeping supply houses have an understanding of the demand. Bees can be ordered and found in the spring for beekeepers who were not aware that they needed to pre-order, but one often has to go with whatever they can find. To resolve the unknown demand of new first-ever springtime beekeepers, some local beekeeping suppliers travel south in the spring and purchase spare packages to meet the unmet demand. This is done at their risk, but they often can sell the excess stock. Sometimes they sell it at a higher cost to recoup their costs, and this should be expected. It is important to point out again that new bees need to be fed, especially in the first weeks of existence or until the nectar flow. They need syrup and or nectar to be able to produce wax to build new comb, and without it, they will not fill out the frames for the queen to lay eggs. Ask plenty of questions where you purchase your bees about how you should work with them. Beekeeping suppliers have an obligation to provide support for the bees that they sell. Purchasing a nucleus hive. Another way to obtain bees is to purchase a nucleus hive, or better known in beekeeping circles as a nuke. A nucleus hive is a fully functioning hive in miniature. A common nuke box is the same height but holds 5 frames instead of 10. It has a large quantity of bees on fully drawn out frames and includes a working queen, brood, pollen, and stored honey. For this purchase, you will bring your hive body to the supplier, or they will bring a nuke to you. The bees, 5 frames in all, will be transferred from the new hive to your hive. When combined with the 5 additional frames in your hive box, the nucleus hive will rather quickly build into a full box if foraging is available. This will give you a quicker start than putting packaged bees on a hive. Nucs by nature are more expensive, but they give you a more established hive, and that could lead to a honey crop in the first year if conditions are right. More on this will be covered in the expectations section of this guide. Bee types and traits. Purchasing bees can be a complicated decision even for experienced beekeepers, let alone ones that have never done it before. What strain or race to buy is complicated and often not very clear. In general, bee purchases are referred to by race, and Italian and Carniolian bees are the most common for sale. Additional races such as Caucasians, Russians, Buckfasts, and others are available, but more specialized and niche bees versus the widespread use of Italian and Carniolian bees. Certain races are said to have specific characteristics, but bees are also described by their traits, and this leads to more confusion. Traits and characteristics. Before getting into what race of bees to buy, it is important to gain an understanding of the different traits and characteristics of bees that aid in the selection process. Gentleness. Gentleness is a trait in bees that beekeepers will want, especially for keeping bees in populous areas. Beekeepers should not tolerate being buzzed and having bees in their face by guard bees upon arrival in the bee yard or when boxes are open in proper conditions. Aggressiveness is bred out of bees, and reputable suppliers should provide bees that are gentle in nature and a pleasure to work with. Ramp up and conservation of stores. Beekeepers would prefer not to feed bees and have them survive on what nature provides. Bees of different races use food available to them in different ways. As a generalization, it is said that some races use more food and burn more energy keeping the hive warm in cold conditions. Some races are known to scale down the number of bees in the hive when stores are scarce, and they can get through a cold winter with less food than others. Hygienic traits and colony behaviors. Some bees naturally deal with problems within their hive. Often these traits are born from breeding and evolution of the queen stock used to source bees at purchase. An example would be bees that recognize the varroa mite pest in the hive and take measures to manage it within the colony. Varroa mites are destructive to bee populations and vector viruses within the colony. Varroa-sensitive hygienic bees, termed VSH in beekeeping circles, will detect that varroa is present within the larval cell and pull the damaged larvae and mites out of the cell and discard them. Some types of bees like to propolize everything in the hive. Propolis is a sticky gummy resin that the bees use for many purposes. They seal holes, they bind things together, they entomb with the product, and for beekeepers, one of the less desirable traits is when they propolize the frames together and make frame removal for inspections difficult. Some bee races glue everything together, and some don't use hardly at all. Propolis has been noted to be a benefit to the bees and is part of their immunity system, but beekeepers mostly want honey and easy inspections, so bees that make excess propolis as a characteristic are often not selected for ongoing populations. Honeybee races. Italian bees. Italian bees are the most popular bee in the United States. They are often a light yellowish color with alternating brown and black stripes on the abdomen. They start hatching bees early in the spring and are known to produce a lot of bees all the way through to the fall. They are popular due to their gentleness and prolific honey production. Italian bees are not as strong as some of the other races for fall and winter management. They tend to use more stores in the fall and winter and are not as hardy as other bees for overwintering, but they are adequate and should not be foregone for this statement. These bees are the predominant type of bees, and beekeepers use them with great success. Carniolians. Carniolians, or carnies as they're often called, are darker in appearance than Italian bees. Carniolian bees are also a popular choice in the United States. They manage their bee supplies better than Italian bees and ramp down in the fall and grow quickly in the spring. Because of that, they get through winter with less stores and are generally considered to be better at overwintering. They also seem to be better acclimated at cooler climates. The quick ramp up in the spring does come with the tendency to swarm, which is a natural reproduction method for the bees. These bees are gentle and do not tend to use excess propolis in the hive. Caucasian bees. Not in common use in the United States, Caucasian bees are described as the gentlest for all bees, but they have fallen out of favor as they are known to construct bridge comb between open spaces and liberally use propolis in the hive. Other bees you may hear about. Russian bees. These bees are available to the public, but are relatively new to the United States and not available for widespread use. Supplies are limited and not generally available to the common beekeeper. Bees were brought into the U.S. for research and are now being used in some commercial and private bee yards, but have not ramped up to general commercial availability yet. Buckfast, Hybrid, SMR. There are other programs out there that offer different bees with different traits and characteristics by breeding. For the purpose of a beginner guide, they will not be covered here. There are resources on the internet for additional research on bee choices other than Italian and Carniolian races. Recommendations. Even with the base information that is provided here, there is still a question of how to proceed for the new beekeeper. The truth of the matter is, most established beekeeping supply houses do a good job, and especially some of those that have been doing it year after year. If you still have an uncertainty, then it is likely that you have a local supplier that you can get hands-on with. In fact, local beekeeping suppliers are an important resource for beekeepers, as you can often speak with someone who owns bees and can provide practical advice. They are in your locale, and many beekeeping things are driven by your local conditions, so having someone to consult with directly is a value add. As an aside, being involved in associations will also provide you with insight through networking with people who like to do business with beekeepers on the local level. Concerning what types of bees to purchase, again, the recommendation is to keep it simple. One might advertise Italian bees or Carniolian bees, but the truth of the matter is most bees are a blend of races, mutts, if you will, and getting fussy about it just doesn't make sense. Good beekeeping suppliers are passionate about putting out good products. They sell stock that makes the most sense, and if they supplied bees that were not a good product, they would not be around for long. There are bad bees out there, and one may have to try different suppliers until you find the product you want. Again, consulting with some local beekeepers is probably a good way to go, as they have done the homework for you and often can make recommendations of what has worked for them. We'll move now to the final section of this guide, which is advice and setting expectations. Beekeeping is fun and engaging. There are very few pursuits that are as educational as keeping bees. Working with bees is fascinating, especially as you begin to understand the nuances that occur in the hive and the interactions inside the colony. Bees truly are amazing insects. In this section, we will share some brief advice and set some expectations for you as a new beekeeper. Start with two hives. More than one, but not so many to be overwhelmed. It is a good idea to have two hives so you can compare one against the other and tell if there are any difficulties. If one is not performing, it will become evident as you have another to compare against. Having two also increases the learning curve. Manage your bees. You need to manage your bees effectively, or you are doing a disservice. Be a beekeeper, not a bee watcher. New beekeepers need time to get acclimated, but one should not be afraid to get engaged in managing the colony. You have our permission. Beekeeping, for the beginning years, is a hands-on endeavor, and there is something new to be learned with each interaction. Some more experienced beekeepers will advise, stay out of the hives, you don't need to be there all the time. But as a new beekeeper, it is important that you get in and work with the bees. You are not going to damage the bees by being in there and doing inspections and getting information. There are times when they are less productive if you're inside the hive, but as a new beekeeper, this should really not be a concern. There is something to be said about overmanaging your bees, but ignoring them is not the right way to go. Get a sense for how they operate and develop a comfort in ascertaining if the colony is operating normal or requires some interaction other than routine inspections. If you're new and you don't know how to control swarms, then maybe it is a good idea not to have too many hives. This is shared because some new beekeepers become overzealous and it rarely works out. The school of having 10 hives because you'll accelerate your learning curve usually doesn't work out very well. Treatment of bees is another topic, and it means taking care of ailments when necessary. It is not recommended to medicate your bees for the sake of keeping them healthy. Just as you would not take an antibiotic as a prophylactic if you wanted to keep yourself from being sick, you should not be introducing medications into the hive for that purpose. A commercial beekeeper may want to take those preemptive measures because if bees become compromised in some way, the commercial beekeeper can't afford that. It costs some money. But as a hobby beekeeper, if a hive becomes sick for whatever reason, depending on what ailment it has, you have time to recover and medicate. Medication, or better yet, integrated pest management without chemicals, should be used only when it is needed. The next bit of advice, take your time. The sensibility of bees requires you to work with a purpose, but one should take their time when working in the hive. Bees do not respond well to banging around in the hive or quick movements. Someone once described this as fluid motion, slow, methodical, and as a new beekeeper, one of the things you want to try and set is what is your objective when you come to the hive, and how am I going to perform those activities? Trying and think a couple steps ahead. Go and execute whatever it is you're doing with the bees, and you'll be far better off than standing there trying to figure out as you go. This is a really important piece of advice. Bees survive by your activities in July and August, not November. Getting your bees to survive over winter is the goal of a first-year beekeeper. Taking the time to keep the bees healthy in the summer months will reward the beekeeper with healthy bees in the fall. Healthy bees that will survive the winter. Even experienced beekeepers lose colonies. Conditions change from year to year, and if you practice good hive management, it is likely that your bees will survive, but sometimes bees do not survive. And for the first couple of years, beekeepers could lose bees and have to purchase more. The number one advice for keeping your bees healthy is if you take care of them in July and August, when Varroa tends to be the biggest problem and compromises the health of the bees, then you'll be better off because they will develop two or three sets of new generations of bees that are healthy and are ready to go through winter. If they're sick and they're not doing well and then they're faced with going through a cold winter, chances are they're compromised and may not make it to the spring. The next expectation is about honey. It is possible to get honey for the first year, especially if you start with a nucleus hive, and the conditions are right with a package hive, you can even get honey. But the first year, there are times when honey has to be left for the bees to survive. Honey, unlike sugar water, contains nutrients, minerals, and different immunity factors that they bring back from plants that they collect. And as you take away the honey and give them sugar water, you're taking some of that nutritional balance out for them. Some beekeepers feel that this is not a problem, but you should consider taking whatever honey you need for the year, but ensure that you leave the appropriate amount of honey for the bees to get over winter. Now, overwintering is your goal for year number one, and honey is an expectation for year number two. You could always sneak some honey out of that first year, and yes, the honey is amazing. Marked queens are easier to work with. Marked queens are easier to find, but truth be told, you do not have to find the queen each time you do an inspection. When you see eggs or young larvae that is not capped, it is reasonable to assume that you have a queen in operation, and you do not have to seek her out on every visit to check on her well-being. Along the same line, if the bees are bringing in pollen at the entrance, chances are they have an operational colony as they're bringing back the food to feed the young brood. Bees cannot do without water. Last but not least, it has been said in this guide previously, but it bears repeating, every beekeeper must ensure that bees have a proper water source, and preferably it is yours and not your neighbor's. Final thoughts. Enjoying the life of a beekeeper. It is difficult to imagine a more fulfilling hobby or sideline as being a beekeeper. Yes, it comes with its stings, but the stings are soothed with the sweet honey. The fascination in managing bees is never-ending, and the reward is great. The colony collapse disorder has taken its toll on the population, and each beekeeper, like a worker in a colony, does their part in bringing bees back to their rightful place in nature. Enjoy not only the beekeeping aspect, but the interaction with other beekeepers who make up one of the more friendly communities you'll ever be involved in, and share the same passion of an amazing insect that provides so much for us and for our earth. We wish you the best in your pursuits, and thank you for taking the time to listen to our guide. Be well. This guide, produced and narrated by Kevin England of the Beekeeper's Corner podcast and released to the public March 2012. For additional information on beekeeping and to subscribe to our podcast, visit our website at www.bkcorner.org. Any comments about this guide can be sent via email to kevin@bkcorner.org.